Revelation 13 verse 1 to 14 verse 5. And I saw a beast rising out of the sea, with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns, and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. One of its heads seemed to have a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed. And the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast. And they worshipped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast, and who can fight against it?" And the beast was given a mouth, uttering haughty and blasphemous words, and it was allowed to exercise authority for 42 months. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. And authority was given it over every tribe and people and language and nation. And all who dwell on earth will worship it, everyone whose name has not been written before the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who was slain. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. If anyone is to be taken captive, to captivity he goes. If anyone is to be slain with the sword, with the sword must he be slain. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had 2 horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs, that is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. Also, it causes all, both great and small, both rich and poor, both free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of man, and its number is 666. Then I looked, and behold, on Mount Zion stood the Lamb, and with him 144,000, who had his name and his Father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, like the roar of many waters, and like the sound of loud thunder. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps, and they were singing a new song before the throne, and before the four living creatures, and before the elders. No one could learn the song, except the 144,000 who have been redeemed from the earth. It is these who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins. It is these who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and the Lamb. And in their mouth no lie was found, for they are blameless.
Hey, good to see you, Marie. Thanks for reading for us. And great to see all of you. Thanks for joining us for church today. My name's Kev. I'm the vicar of Euston Church. If you're running out of decent things to watch on Netflix, you could do a lot worse than Saving Mr. Banks. It's the true story of Walt Disney, played by Tom Hanks, buying the rights to Mary Poppins from the author of the original novel. Mary Poppins was a much darker, harsher tale in its original, And Emma Thompson plays uptight British writer Pamela Travers, who despairs at what this laid-back American is making of her work. There's a great scene where Disney and his musical people play to her their newly composed song, A Spoonful of Sugar Makes the Medicine Go Down, which Pamela hates. She goes on a rant and then proceeds to throw the movie script out of the window. It seems enormously patronizing to me, she says. Just the sort of annoying tune you'd have playing at your themed parks, I dare say. Encouraging children to face the world, unarmed. All you need is a spoon and some sugar and a brain full of fluff. Disney interjects at this point. What's your point, Pam? My point is that unlike you, Mary Poppins is the very enemy of whimsy and sentiment. She doesn't sugarcoat the darkness of this world, which these children will inevitably come to know. She prepares them for it. This entire script is flim-flam. I know what you're thinking. I should have auditioned for the part myself, shouldn't I? But see, the point is, there's a temptation for church to be a little bit Disney, fluffy and sentimental, maybe particularly at the moment. Give me some escapism on a Sunday, please. And that's why it's so good for us to have been hearing God speak in Revelation, because there's not been a lot of sugarcoating in these last few chapters. And that's because God doesn't sugarcoat the darkness of this world, which we will inevitably come to know. He prepares us for it. To the one who conquers, Jesus wrote to the seven churches. Revelation is about spiritual warfare, which sounds very dramatic and can be easily misunderstood. This is not about the churches taking up physical arms in any sense at all, but military language is appropriate for how the Christian life often feels. It's a battle just to survive, don't you find that? I do. The big enemy is Satan. We met him last week, and I don't know how that was for you. Maybe it was the first time you'd thought of him as a real person, active and intimidating. He's lost already in heaven, remember? The war has been won by Jesus. But like a cornered animal, he lashes out to the last. Not now against Michael and the angels in heaven, but down here against you and me. 12:12, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them, because Satan's been beaten now up there. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath, because he knows that the time is short. So be forewarned is the thing. Forearmed, know your enemy as he prowls around. Our first point is about a picture of a beast. Imagine you're walking along on the beach. You're down by the seashore, your feet in the wet sand. Suddenly you notice something emerging. Verse 1. I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like a bear's, and its mouth was like a lion's mouth. This is a guy called Nick Minogue, no relation to Kylie. He escaped from the clutches of a great white shark last year by punching it in the face. Apparently, he also said a rude word to it, but I won't give you any more details of that. If you see one of these things emerging from the water, I doubt you'd approach it with an uppercut, or even that you'd be saying, I wonder what that particular head symbolizes in the Old Testament imagery. Now, if you see one of those coming out of the water, you run for your life. And that's the big point here. It's not complicated. He's a destructive, bad guy. Satan was the dragon last week. This beast is not Satan. They're different characters. But notice this beast is given power by Satan. End of verse 2. And to it the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. So, who's the beast? Well, in Daniel chapter 7, a leopard, a lion, a bear, and a ten-horned beast represented four different real-world empires. Here they're all combined into a super beast. But the basic thing is that in the Bible, beast equals kingdoms and authorities against God. For sure, the seven churches would be imagining Rome. But the seven heads probably represent various manifestations. This beast is active through the whole 42 months. Verse 5, remember that's symbolic of the entire period between Jesus' ascension and return. This beast also has a global reach. Verse 7. Perhaps there will be a more intense manifestation of this just before the end. But here is a picture of empires and governments through the centuries strutting their stuff against God. Now, it's important to say the state is not necessarily the beast. Governing authorities have a God-given function in promoting justice. And around the world and in this country, particularly where those governments have been influenced by Christianity, they have fulfilled that task to varying degrees. Satan remains the big baddie, but his purposes are often state-sponsored. Notice drawing worship towards the beast, verse 4. My Lord and my God, is what they said to Emperor Domitian. Now, I said, if you saw this beast, you'd want to run from it. But the really interesting thing is how most people don't. And this is why tyrannies survive and thrive through history. Most people are in awe enough to bow the knee, even when the methods are unscrupulous, because who can fight against it? Believers who refuse to bow are subversive, and this beast is blatant in its hostility to them. Verse 6. It opened its mouth to utter blasphemies against God, blaspheming his name and his dwelling, that is, those who dwell in heaven. Also, it was allowed to make war on the saints and to conquer them. Notice again in Revelation, allowed to. This beast is on a leash. It operates under permissions, but some terrible permissions are given to it. So think of Smyrna back in the Roman Empire, one of those seven churches, or China after 1800. ISIS, just in the last decade, lining up Christians to behead them on TV. North Korea. I don't know if you've thought about this much, but if you're a Christian, there are authorities in the world today that want to make war against you. It's just an accident of geography that they can't get their hands on you right now, though they have got their hands on many of your brothers and sisters around the world today. Pray for them. Let's support them, as we were challenged to in that video. And let's remember, we share a calling with them. So we experience nothing like what they do. Let's put any persecution we experience into proportion. Though as Western democracies move away from their Christian heritage, don't be surprised when we see blasphemies against God and his people creeping through legislation or through the secular values of London, loud and everlasting. Expect casualties is the point of verse 10. I'm not sure how Walt Disney would sugarcoat this one if it was a movie. The lamb was slain, and you might be too, if you refuse to worship pretenders to his throne. Verse 10. Here is a call for the endurance and faith of the saints. Faithful unto death, remember? That's the order from our commander-in-chief. And to face less than death, we've to be faithful. And it's our calling that we share with our North Korean siblings. Totally grim to think of what they're going through, but not complicated to know what to do in the face of brazen hostility. Keep the faith. Our second point gives us a picture of another beast, and it may feel closer to home, this one. Verse 11. Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It's another beast, which means it's another baddie. But the difference here is this one looks like a lamb. Notice verse 11. A lamb with dragon breath. A dragon in sheep's clothing, you might say. This is a more subtle attack. I wonder, would you even spot this beast coming to get you? See, the second beast seems to exercise power in a more religious way. It looks like a lamb. That means it looks a bit like Jesus in Revelation. It performs signs. They involve fire, verse 13. Remember, that stuff was symbolic of God's people as prophets in chapter 11. Actually, we'll see in chapter 16 that the second beast is called specifically the false prophet. It gets people to do religious things here, but it's a fake. Verse 14. By the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. See, Satan's actually not that bothered if he can't get you dead right now, as long as he can get you worshipping anything other than Jesus. Remember the seven churches, Pergamum, where Satan dwells? Full frontal persecution hadn't worked there, but some in the church were being deceived by false prophets to sacrifice to the gods of Rome. It was the same in Thyatira. And the really interesting thing to know is Satan is not deploying two completely separate and independent strategies here. Now, the second beast works alongside the first, verse 12. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, or could be translated on his behalf, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. Religion in collusion with the powers that be. That's been a big thing through the years. Even very dubious tyrants have been clever enough to realize they couldn't destroy religion. They often want the blessing of religion on their regimes, and religions are often shrewd enough to know that they need the state to survive. It's like they feed off each other in that way. And more often, this was Rome's tactic. You can worship your gods for sure, as long as you bow to us too. We've talked about the trade dinners where idolatrous emperor worship took place. Faithful Christians couldn't get involved, so they got sacked, or no one did business with you, you're disloyal to the cause. That's what verse 16 to 17 is probably about. People get very excited in these verses about barcodes and electronic tags. The basic point is, if you want to trade, you have to be marked out as part of the crowd who've bowed the knee. Suddenly there are dragons in sheep's clothing in the church saying, go to the guild dinner, you can worship Nero or pretend to. Jesus will understand the realpolitik. He knows it's just normal in this culture. Unreasonable to resist, really. Euston Church is part of the Church of England, which is a state church. And as a state church, it will always be vulnerable to collaborating with the values of the system to keep its privileges. You may not know that it's the Prime Minister who officially appoints all the bishops in the Church of England. So you better not be too far off government policy if you want to become a bishop. Or if you're one of our mission partners like Maxime and Demelza looking to the Bordeaux local council to give you a building to meet in, you won't be teaching that Jesus is the only way stuff, will you? Some of the pressure points for us are around multi-faith issues, medical ethics, gender and sexuality. Maybe you felt the pressure from the system. If you run a Christian group in the workplace, we'll let you meet if you sign this, or you can work here if you engage in these practices. We only do business with people who celebrate these values. The point is, beware of the dragon in lamb's clothing. Teachers who seem a bit like Jesus. Maybe they don't even know they're deceivers themselves. But in their books and their blogs and their sermons, they affirm devotion to the world's gods and destroy devotion to the Lord. And I'm very aware it's complex, isn't it, when you're trying to live in the world, but not of the world, to be fully engaged and compassionate and crystal clear on who it is that you serve. This calls for wisdom, verse 18 says. Trickier in that sense than the brute force of the first beast. How do you wise up to the second beast then? Well, there's a very simple giveaway. It's not about decoding the number 666. That's not Satan's PIN number. The thing to focus on is in verse 11. See, the second beast looks like a lamb, but it speaks like a dragon. So however many robes they wear, or PhDs they have, or emotive and excellently produced videos they put online, focus on their words. Do you know what they say the main training is if you want to become an expert in spotting fake art? Know the real thing really, really well. And that's another reason for prioritizing our Bible times. Hey, well done for doing that at the moment, even though it's hard to find the headspace to focus on anything. Satan hasn't gone into lockdown. And that means it's essential battle training for his more subtle assaults when you're in the small group and listening to the sermon and in the lunchtime talk. Hard to have the energy to focus, for sure. But we will get eaten alive spiritually if we're not alert and proactive. Don't forget, after looking at all of this, Jesus wins. What we're doing here in this part of Revelation is going round the cycle again. Do you remember that cycle? Chaos on the earth will again, we'll see, be followed by a day of his coming, and then his people gathered round the throne. God doesn't disnify the present, but he sure is committed to happy endings. But remember, as we've gone round those cycles, what always comes in between the picture of a world in turmoil and the Lord's return? Do you remember? Witness. And that's next week, chapter 14. You may feel like bunkering down in a corner after what we've heard today. Satan's so brutal and so wily. But there's a world to be won. There's an enemy to be defeated on earth as he has been already in heaven. There's an army to be engaged in the work of demolishing the lies and the strongholds of Satan. And Jesus wants to use his churches to shine as lampstands of godliness and truth in a dark place. Do you want to be used by him in that way? Well, chapter 13 is the essential training in the face of suffering. Keep the faith. When the world seduces, keep a wise head.